Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi. And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name, as it is every week, is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of November 22nd, 2016. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, who is also every week called Mr. D.R. Tucker. How you doing, D.R.?
Good. How you doing?
Good, 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 good. So, D.R., the debacle of the Trump administration continues. One of the, right now in this transition period, Trump is trying to flesh out his cabinet appointments, his high-level appointments, and of course, one of those appointments will be to the EPA. There'll be one to the Department of Energy. There's some fairly Bureau of Land Management, but one of the topics has gotten particular interest is that the person who would replace our beloved Gina McCarthy as the administrator of the Environmental Protection Administration, right? So tell me, DR, can you lay out what the what's the state of play with the next administration as far as EPA appointments?
Well, there's a tremendous speculation that a fellow by the name of Myron Abell will end up being the next EPA administrator. He's currently leading Trump's EPA transition team. He is a hyper-libertarian, one of these guys who's been forever promoting the idea that global warming is just a big hoax. He was previously one of these guys who promoted the idea that smoking cigarettes can't give you cancer. CNN's Jake Tapper did a great segment on November the 17th, basically describing his track record, describing how radical his views are, and how his views are at odds not just with the vast majority of climate scientists, but even with some Republicans like former Congressman Bob Inglis. And the idea that if he takes over, he could just be potentially, he could be literally the worst EPA administrator of all time. There's just general consensus that I believe her name was the late Ann Buford, who was Reagan's first EPA administrator, who was like flagrantly and notoriously corrupt, just in your face corrupt. And it's generally seen as one of the worst, as the single worst EPA administrator of all time. Reagan had to get rid of her after 2.5 years because she was so corrupt. And Abell could even be worse than Miss Buford was. And that's saying something.
So tell me, I guess I had heard more that this guy is such an ideologue and so committed to the fossil fuel agenda, and he would be put in charge of the Clean Power Plan and essentially charged with dismantling it, slow walking it, starving
it down the toilet, basically
flushing it down the toilet, right? And that is a terrible prospect, right? To have this person who is deliberately, who is committed to not take climate action, being in charge of the plan to address climate change.
And there's already speculation that you may see a mass exodus of staffers from the EPA, from people who would prefer not to work for this guy. There was a similar exodus, again, when Ann Buford took over the EPA in the early 80s, from people who realized just how radical she was, and history is expected to repeat itself here.
I mean, that's a question. Do you think that it is the right thing to do? Do you stay and fight? If you're ready to lose your job, right, or quit your job, is it, I mean, I can't speak for, you know, anyone in the EPA, but is it better to stay and go down fighting and be fired when they get mad enough at you, but resist from within? Or is it better to make the principal statement of resigning to show publicly your displeasure?
Well, I think I can't blame people for wanting out because, you know, everybody remembers how climate science was sabotaged and scorned in the George W. Bush administration. There were some courageous whistleblowers like the late Rick Piltz, who basically exposed how viciously the George W. Bush administration was treating climate science. You remember James Hansen stood up in 2006 and said that he was being repeatedly censored by the George W. Bush administration. And you can't blame people for not wanting to go through that sort of claptrap again, because, you know, again, you know, no one wants to be sabotage when they're just trying to do their job. And if you go back to the George W. Bush years, even local EPA administrators, I think if you look up the story of Mary Gade, G-A-D-E, who was an EPA administrator during the George W. Bush era, who tried to do her job, tried to honor science, and basically had a knife run right through her back for doing so. No one wants to go through that sort of stuff again.
I mean, a metaphorical knife, I hope you mean.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. Oh, good. Well, I think that the we will watch, but I think that the slow walking or proposed cancellation of the Clean Power Plan is the least of the issues surrounding a guy like Myron Ebel. Was it Ebel or Ebel? I still don't. I mean, I
Abel.
Abel. Okay. Abel. Accent on the second syllable, huh? Mm-hmm. Okay. So I guess the there's this increasing sequence of bad things that can happen, right? Mm-hmm. We've had the Paris Agreement, but as we discussed, you know, in our bliss before the election, we discussed the fact that the ratification of the Paris Agreement means that it takes 4 years for a country to leave the Paris Agreement, which, mm-hmm. for better or worse, would put it after the Trumpster gets in. Right. Mm-hmm. And so he can't really pull out, he, you know, legally. But then there's, I guess I saw a discussion of this even worse nightmare scenario that there is no such restriction on the United States pulling out of the what's called the framework, which is the treaty signed in 1992 by the first Bush, the UNFCCC, which is the sort of the agreement under which the Kyoto Protocol and all these COP meetings and the Paris Agreement all fall into that. And I think it's conceivable that Trump could simply pull out of that 1992 agreement, which would then obviate everything else, you know, day one of his administration. Mm-hmm. Have you heard that?
Yes, there's been some speculation that what would happen was that would be that, in essence, the United States no longer participates in any of the conference of parties, that it would still continue, just that the United States would no longer have a seat at the table, that the reason George H.W. Bush signed the UN Framework Convention was to make sure that the United States had a seat at the table during climate negotiations. And now, if Trump pulled out of the UN Framework Convention, it would still continue, but the United States would have no role, and therefore other countries who are signatories to the UN Framework Convention would basically take the lead, while the United States basically, decides to basically go all in on trying to burn as much coal and drill as much oil and frack as much natural gas as possible.
And I mean, so that just leaves, you know, one further level into this. Now, whether or not even Trump is crazy enough to try and pull out of this UNFCCC, because there would be ramifications well beyond climate stuff, right? Mm-hmm. It's really disruptive of. But the fact that the U.S. is going to basically become a non-player in the international climate work in the future leaves an open field for China to assume world global leadership on this topic that they see in their own self-interest, you know, addressing climate change, and the rest of the world thinks is important. So all of a sudden, Trump's asinine move makes China the most important country in the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, have you read anything about that?
It's funny because, you know, what Trump doesn't seem to realize is that by pulling out, it would make China essentially a superpower on this issue, in the United States not so much. And it's, you know, we all talk about how Trump seems to have this fondness for basically being submissive to Russia. Would he be submissive to, would he essentially allow China to run ahead of the United States on this as well? It's just remarkably short-sighted thinking on the part of the president-elect.
Yes, right. But I'm not sure the man does a lot of thinking. That's the problem. Short-sighted or long-term.
I guess you could say it would be a huge and a big league mistake on the part of Trump to pull out.
Big league mistake.
The Framework Convention, exactly.
Yes, big league. Well, as you know, even now, in Marrakesh, Morocco, on the northern coast of Africa, there is the treaty. There's not a treaty, but another one of these conferences of the parties, which 10 days ago, we were all prepared to celebrate the progress in Marrakesh towards the Paris Agreement. But now, they're all thrown into disarray. I guess Secretary Kerry was there recently speaking and reassured. And I guess one of the messages that Kerry was making, okay, so Marrakesh International Climate Meeting, much like the Paris Accord, people from all countries, Kerry shows up, gives a speech. I think the gist of his speech is that, that no matter what Trump does, the cost of clean energy and the market forces driving renewable energies are already so strong that he cannot do anything about it, that fossil fuels and coal are already dead. The clean energy market is already so cheap that it can't be stopped. Did you see that? Did I get it right? Or do you believe it?
You characterized it right. I wonder how many of the attendees really believe that. You know, Kerry essentially getting up there and singing, you know, the old Stevie Wonder song, "Don't You Worry About a Thing." I think people do have a lot of things to be worried about because, again, you know, and Joe Rome of Climate Progress, Peter Sinclair of Climate Crocs have pointed this out, that there have been advances in clean energy before in this country led by, you know, governments taking it seriously, most notably in the Carter administration, but then the subsequent Reagan administration slowed things down to a crawl. Joe Rome has pointed out that, you know, when Newt Gingrich was running the United States Congress, he slowed clean energy development down to a crawl. The George W. Bush years, you saw clean energy development also slow down. So there is a concern that for all the happy talk that Kerry is providing, and yes, we all respect his leadership, nevertheless, if there is not a commitment on the part of the United States government to advancing, you know, clean energy and maximizing the potential of clean energy, that we could see this sort of stuff slow down. There's tremendous concern that Congress could figure out some way to get rid of tax credits for renewable energy and thus, you know, substantially damage the United States clean energy market.
But I guess, though, I mean, I'm thinking that, and I think what Kerry was saying was that even if the United States is imbecilic enough to do those things, right, China is already cranking out solar panels and wind turbines as fast as they can, right? And they're not going to quit. So at a global level, I think the remark would be that at a global level, a player like China can continue to grow that market in a way that the United States just won't participate. And here in the U.S., yeah, it's all going to slow down. But not. But globally, China will be the winner. I mean, and so will the planet, I hope. But I mean, it's...
You know, it's interesting. Remember in the 2004 debate with George W. Bush where Kerry made that remark about the need to pass a quote-unquote global test and all of Kerry's critics beat him up over that? You know, right now we're seeing if the United States is in fact going to pass the global test on this, and we'll see if the United States fails or succeeds.
Well, speaking of failing and succeeding at the global test, the other position that has a lot to do with climate, well, there's a bunch that, but one other position that the Donald will have to fill is the Secretary of State. And I've heard a couple names bandied about, one of which was Newt Gingrich, who famously sat on a bench with Nancy Pelosi and said climate change was an issue, right? But who else is in the running? Tell me, what's the state of play for Secretary of State?
Another rumored Secretary of State is Mitt Romney, who, as we know, you know, helped, along with former New York Governor George Pataki, helped to orchestrate the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, then pulled out of the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative when he first started having, you know, presidential dreams.
Potomac
then
fever. Then
famously made a sick joke about climate change at the 2012 Republican National Convention. Then a couple of years afterwards did a speech, I think, in Boston where he acknowledged that climate change was a problem. Then when in January 2015, when he was rumored to try to make a second run for the presidency, he again acknowledged that climate change was a problem. So it would be interesting if he would then reverse his reversal of his reversal in order to work in a Trump administration, or if he would, you know, have some degree of dissent with the man in charge. Now, there is some precedent for this because, in a way, because remember, in the George H.W. Bush administration, the then Secretary of State James Baker made one of his first major speeches about the climate threat in January of 1989. However, there were other officials in the George H.W. Bush administration, Bush's energy secretary and his chief of staff, John Sununu, the father of the current governor of New Hampshire, who
Did
also
he win?
Felt it was a...
He won? Okay.
Yes, yes, Chris Sununu won. But Sununu and the energy secretary also thought it was a hoax. So there is a historical precedent for disagreements within a certain administration on this issue. However, you do wonder if Romney would in fact be willing to sort of buck the Trump administration on the seriousness of this issue, or if he would knuckle under and then basically parrot the official Trump line on this.
Well, that raises the whole question, which we don't have time to go into, of the acquiescence and, shall we say, collaborationist attitude of the Republican leadership, who are all now kissing the ring of the orange-headed one. And, I mean, all I know is those guys are going to go down in history as traitors to the country. I mean, they had a chance to stand up and say something, and they didn't. They haven't. Mm-hmm. Okay, put that aside. One other issue I just want to touch on is, and it comes back to the kinds of things that people can take action on and support in the here and now, is the Dakota Access Pipeline, right, which pits the most iconic kind of thing, Native Americans defending their land and water against the militarized forces of, you know, the cowboy types. I heard a couple of things this week. I mean, it's all a lot of stuff swirling around. Do you have your hands around what is going on with the Dakota Access Pipeline in the last few days?
Yeah, there have been two major developments. First is that the Obama administration has declined to grant a final easement for a disputed section of the Dakota Access Pipeline. There's speculation that this would simply delay the completion of the pipeline until after the Trump administration officially takes over. However, it could potentially delay the pipeline for a bit longer than that, because the Seattle Times notes that legally, the energy transfer partners, they have to have this done.
They're the company that's building DAPL, right?
Exactly. The parent company apparently signed contracts stating that this project will be fully operational by January 1, 2017. And if it's not fully operational by January 1, 2017, then the $4 billion they invested in this could be going right down the drain. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see what happens and what the final resolution of this is.
What I read was that basically with the fall, so that $4 billion came into the energy transfer partners company at a time when the expectations were high for natural gas and oil. And since then, the price has collapsed. So all these people that have that money on the line may want to get the heck out while the getting's good, right? So it's not
they might want to play Powerball.
They might want to play Powerball. It's just that they so it's, in many ways, it's similar to what happened to Cape Wind, right? Mm-hmm. That they couldn't produce the financing. They couldn't get the job, and the big players walked away because the big players are protecting their own money. So we can only hope that come January 1st, those big players don't stay with the Dakota Access Pipeline and want to get out of the whole deal, because the oil and gas industry prices have collapsed. So nothing to do with noble attitudes, is pure money, right?
The protesters, the water protectors, they keep on saying water is life. I guess we can find out that greed is death.
There you go. So, dear, I will have to leave it there. We will be back. These topics, unfortunately, are not going to go away anytime soon. We'll put up links to most of what we talked about at the blog. It's massclimateaction.org/blog. Please check us out. By the way, you can donate to MCAN. It's one of those actions that you can do to support and fight against the Trump administration's misdeeds. You can find us on Facebook at /massclimateaction. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher or TuneIn Radio. You can find us on iTunes. You can find us on Overcast. You can find us on Podbean. You can find us on SoundCloud. We are all over the place. We'll close the other way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's a patriotic duty of citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States not accept the Trump climate policies, and that the United States put a price on carbon. So, DR, thank you very much for being here.
Thanks.
Thanks to everyone for listening. Hang in there. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.